Okay, now to get everybody awake and pumped, we have two presentations and a short announcement. We'll follow that on another project of ARSC's. And I'd like to introduce our first speaker. His name is Tim Brooks. I've known him for quite a while. And you probably know enough about him by now that I won't go into his bio. Certainly I do. ARSC and the... And copyright. This is an update for you. This is a major endeavor of ARSC, obviously, that's been going on for several years. And there are a number of things that have happened over the last year, more that we anticipate will happen in the next year. So let me take you briefly through that, and I'd be happy to take any questions you have at the end. First of all, in 2005, the ARSC board adopted the first, for the first time ever, actually, a formal statement on our position on copyright, the organization's position. And probably is no surprise to you, and all of us who work in the field, it concluded that several provisions of U.S. copyright law impeded both preservation and access to historical recordings. Following that, and so we went on record, in other words, for the first time, so to speak. Following that, the Copyright and Fair Use Committee studied the law, spent some time developing five specific recommendations for changes in the law, to get specific about it. And this is long before we had any idea whether all of this was a pipe dream or not, but we needed to get a roadmap. And the first and most important of those was bringing pre-1972 recordings currently under state law and heavily restricted for that use, and with public domain so far in the future you can hardly see it, bring them under federal law so that we would have one set of laws and could work on that for better preservation and access terms. And then there were four others, rationalizing the term, which is of course quite long in the United States, 95 years for most, legalizing orphan recordings, permitting use of abandoned or out of print recordings under some circumstances, and permitting best practices, the Section 108 issues. So those were developed during 2006 and 2007. During 2008, as you probably remember, we took this to Washington, first time we'd ever done anything like that. We had no idea what kind of reception we'd have. The board at the time, under the leadership of Sam Brolofsky, who was president at the time, really stepped up to the plate and appropriated what, for ARSC, was an enormous amount of money to engage a Washington representative, a lobbyist, at least for a brief period. I say enormous for ARSC. It was barely a raindrop in Washington. The money flowing around there is just mind-boggling. But it was a big step for us, and we engaged a firm named Wexler and Walker. Malcolm Grace, who some of you heard last year at the conference, was the lead attorney there, and they basically introduced with us and on our behalf our proposals to a wide range of power players in Washington. More than 20 congressmen specifically singled out because they were involved in copyright. They were on the Copyright Committee of the House, where so much of this stuff originates, not random congressmen. And we also met Sam and I with Mary Beth Peters, the head of copyright at the Register of Copyright at under the Library of Congress. We met with the RIAA. Those were very interesting meetings, and the story will be told someday, I'm sure. And although not as confrontational as we, not nearly as confrontational as we thought they might be, and we introduced these proposals to the NRPB, the National Recording Preservation Board, as well. That was all during early 2008. Concurrently, we solicited support from other organizations, the feeling being that ARSC alone out there would have much less a chance of having any impact than if we could get some allies. Allies and larger groups always count in Washington. And to my knowledge, ARSC, although it certainly has had relationships with other organizations, we've had joint meetings on occasion with other, but we've never, to my knowledge, tried to assemble a real coalition around a goal. And that's not easy because many of these organizations are quite Byzantine in terms of their structure. Many of them are risk averse to the extreme, lots of things. But we did reach out and managed to line up to date seven other organizations to sign on and endorse these goals. The largest of them being the American Library Association, which is kind of the 800-pound gorilla out there among library associations. They have their own lobbying office in Washington and are quite active. But also others, AMIA, Association of Jazz Record Collectors, is an all-librarian, Music Library Association, and so forth. And most recently, you may have read in the newsletter, the Popular Culture Association, who we hadn't actually, you know, gone after, heard about this. I know Gary Burns is the president of that organization, and they saw the proposals and they voted unanimously to endorse them and come on board as well. So there are a total, including ourselves, of eight organizations now that are backing some or all. Most of them are backing all five of proposals. A couple of them are taking it one at a time, and they're backing all of them are backing bringing pre-72 recordings under federal law. So we do have allies in this. Total membership of all these organizations together is over 70,000. So this is maybe at the beginning of the level that starts to attract the attention of Washington. During 2008, with the approval of the board, we also launched a formal coalition in which we went to a few of those organizations that were most committed and asked them if they would put some money into this to start a more formal organization, which wound up being called the Historic Recording Coalition for Access and Preservation. It's backwards, isn't it? preservation, access. It's access and preservation, obviously. So the Music Library Association and the Society for American Music joined us in that. They each put some money in, enough to establish a website, hire a programmer, get the URLs and all that sort of thing. And we set up this is so we would have a locus, a place where the recommendations would live and where the rationale for them would live, press and other organizations, people could come to find out about this and we could direct them to. And that's been established at recordingcopyright.org. And I encourage you all to check that out. It's the first priority. This is the home page of that website. Just recently updated to include information on the Popular Culture Association joining and some other recent developments. In 2009, we looked like we had a little momentum, actually, in early 2008. Congress came to a complete stop, and it was nothing about us. It was about the election of 2008, actually. And they didn't pass anything. They just threw chairs at each other, and that was kind of all that Congress did in the second half of 2008. So all copyright matters, which was far down on their priority compared to getting reelected, were put on hold. Including Orphan Works, which was making some progress. By a backdoor maneuver that I won't go through, we nevertheless managed to get ARSC's language inserted into a funding bill in early 2009, which directed the Copyright Office for the first time in its history to formally study the desirability and means of bringing pre-72 recordings under federal law. And they were given 2 years to do this. President Obama signed that funding bill in March of 2009. I'm sure he was unaware that on page 892 there was a line that said that the Copyright Office, but nonetheless he signed it. So go President Obama. And they are now on the clock. They have to do this study. You heard in last year's conference some copyright experts, some real insiders talking about that. They were kind of impressed, actually, that within a year we were able to get that much done, since they spend their careers trying to get anything done there. The Copyright Office reaction to that, we know that they didn't want that in the law. They didn't want another, not because they oppose it, by the way, not because they don't think that pre-72 should be brought under federal law. They generally say that's a good idea. But they have other priorities, and they don't want things in their way of their other priorities. Nonetheless, now that it's in the law, they have committed to doing this and doing it fairly. And from what I understand, and you know, perhaps you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, once they do something, they generally do try to do it right. And so we don't. We hope they will certainly do that in this case. We've had several indications of that. They gave a presentation to the NRPB, you know, outlining how they were going to approach this. Last fall, one of the senior attorneys there, I ran into at an event, and she said, yes, we're going to work on this. And just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, I had an email exchange with Mary Beth Peters, and she, the Register of Copyright, and she said, yes, we are going to meet our March 2011 deadline. We've determined the area within the Copyright Office that's going to carry that out. So we do believe they're going to do the study. Now, as part of the study, they are supposed to take public comment and have some mechanism for input, and they have not yet announced when that's going to be. Obviously, it has to be between now, probably this fall at some point. So where we are right now and where your Copyright Committee is waiting for the announcement of what it is exactly that we're supposed to respond to and what the mechanism for doing that will be. And in the meantime, there's no real action going on copyright, so this would be the next big thing. And it's good, in a way, that nothing's going on copyright, because that means nothing bad has been passed. And it's bad, it means nothing good has been passed, so there's your Congress for you. So I don't anticipate there would be much happening in copyright until 2011 at the earliest, which is an off election year, which increases its chances more. The committee has been getting ready for that eventuality. A couple of new members on the committee include Bruce Epperson, who's an attorney in Florida, who's very interested in copyright. You may have seen the columns he's been writing in the Journal. He's written several pieces for us there on sound-related recording developments and court actions and that sort of thing. And he's ready to help us from a legal perspective in what we submit. There's a new member, I don't believe is at the conference, named John Geis, who is a paralegal, who's going to help as well. And the rest of the committee is in place, too. We have a couple of, I'll show you the membership in a moment. So we're gearing up to be ready to do that. A couple of other things I should make you aware of is that that have developed over the last year in this area is that the recording industry got a law passed, the Pro-IP Act, in 2008, which, among other things, established a copyright czar. You've heard about these czars. Well, there's a czar for copyright enforcement, specifically, in the White House, reporting to the president. They want their person up there. But the administration surprised them by not appointing one of their insiders, which they thought they would get, like an RIA attorney or something, but rather appointing one by the name of Victoria Espinel, who is a former academic and, well, once an academic, always, I guess, and a head of a nonprofit who has worked for the industry issues and presumably understands their issues and could be sympathetic, but is not by any means in their pocket and is not as blatantly pro-industry as we feared. And some public groups, in fact, have endorsed this as a welcome breath of fresh air, somebody who might bring a little more balance to this. One of the first things she did was request comments on how she should approach this copyright enforcement task that she's been given by the Act. And she didn't just ask the RIA to tell her what to do. She opened it up to the public, and she got an earful, believe me, including from us. Even though it was like a two-week window, it was very short. You had to be watching closely to know this was happening. But we managed to get both of our partners in the coalition to sign on, and under the auspices of the Recording Coalition, submitted a position paper basically saying, don't forget about archives and preservation when you do this. And that's available at the White House website if you care to read it. One major challenge we have had and will have is that the cost of remaining engaged in Washington the way that most industries do it, and certainly the way the recording industry does it, is extremely high. Our representation, piddling though it was in their means, or big as it was in ours, got us about 3 or 4 months worth of representation back in 2008. We simply can't afford to do that on an ongoing basis the way the big guys can. So this is being done pretty much on a shoestring. At the moment, that's not a terrible problem because not is happening right now. However, the two main advantages of having some kind of representation there on some kind of basis is twofold. First of all, they watch very closely what's happening and what's bubbling up under the surface and alert you when something is about to break. And things can, although they can be quiet for a long time, they can break very fast in Washington. Committee can literally report out a bill and 24 hours later, within 24 hours, have a vote on the House floor for it. Not terribly democratic, not a lot of time for people to look at things, but unless you've got somebody watching them like a hawk, it may be over by the time you read about it in the paper. So representative or lobbyists and those people, they watch that, they talk to each other, they hear what's going on, and they alert you so that you can get your membership to start bombarding their congressmen and things like that if something is about to happen, good or bad. The other thing is, of course, they have enormous Rolodexes or whatever the electronic equivalent is these days. They know where the bodies are buried. They know who the people are. A lot of them, lobbyists, have been on the other side themselves. So they can get through to the power brokers that we may not be able to do and have influence on them, too. A lot of schmoozing down there. It's probably where a lot of the money goes, to booze and schmooze, actually. So they can help a great deal in that way, but it's like a narcotic, as David Soibert said at one point, I think. It's great to have somebody doing all that down there for you, but it's like a minimum price of entry of $100,000 a year to have that kind of representation down there. So until we find a financial angel of some sort, that's out of our reach. But we may try to do something among the organizations in the coalition if, in fact, that becomes essential for us to have. This is the committee at the present time. As I mentioned, a few new members, Bruce Epperson and John Geis, recently joined. Jennifer Matthews joined. She was at the conference here, and she's still here. Jerry McBride is our representative, who's here, is our representative to MLA. We have, as you notice, a number of international members, from Canada and one from the UK. Very important to keep track of what's going on in other countries because the recording companies certainly do and try to play the countries off against each other. So we need to know that because we can do the same thing. We can use some of the good things that are happening in Europe and keeping copyright within bounds in our arguments here. Copyright expansion is stalled in Europe, by the way, at the present time because of the major pushback against it by institutions and the public that's been organized over there. What can you do? Well, the first is to keep the issue alive in your own organizations. People forget about this. I can't imagine how anybody could forget about ARSC and its goals, but if you probably do, the head of the music library and the deans, it's not always what they think about when they wake up in the morning. So keeping this issue that so many don't know about the restrictions on preservation and access to this, our historical heritage, is the first thing, talk it up. The second is that when those times come when a university or an archive has to decide, what to do in terms of posting or access, encourage them to take positions on this, not just to duck the whole issue, and use risk assessment, which is something that lawyers do understand. They've heard that term before. Depending on the lawyers, historically they're very conservative and they want to take the most conservative approach. But there are some, and several institutions in this room, represented in this room, have done this, have found legal counsel willing to be a little more flexible on that and look around. And the more that do that, the more they encourage each other. So risk assessment as opposed to most conservative in access particularly. And direct contact from Congress to Congress, especially when a bill is coming up, is incredibly effective, and not from a lot of people, because they never hear about this issue. And if they get 5 or 10, messages that this bill is coming up, and I think you ought to, be on the right side on this, they figure that it's not just your vote. You talk to other people in the district too. And they don't want to make enemies, and it's not a big issue, and nobody's really fighting against it. And they will often listen, and certainly will raise their awareness of it. So there's a how-to sheet that's now it was handed out last year when we were in Washington, and it's available in a more generic form on the recordingcopyright.org site now. There's also a petition on the site, and I encourage you to look at that. This is the petition. It's an easy click through from the home page. It says join us, sign petition, you click and you get here. And all it asks is some identification of who you are and will you endorse this statement that I suspect most people in this room would probably easily endorse, supporting preservation and access of historic recordings while acknowledging and preserving the rights of creators. Very important. You can even be anonymous if you really want to. Just click the thing down at the bottom. It just needs to know you. Who you say you are, but it doesn't have to publicize your email address if you don't want to do that. I mention this because it's been up for a year now, and less than 100 people have signed this on the web. I suspect there's 100 people here in the room. How many have signed the petition? Okay. Are you aware of the petition?
No. Now we are.
Are you aware now of the petition? What are you going to do?
Sign.
Thank you. Sign. Drill baby. Sign, right? Sign baby sign. I don't want to have, there's nothing political about this, folks. Really, it's very easy to do. We need to show some numbers in this. If you want to add a comment, you can. You don't have to. These are some of the comments that have been up there, though. I know the print is kind of small there, but just some random ones. Access to our audio heritage is vital to me as a professional archivist. Another one, copyright system surrounding audio recordings is dysfunctional. As a musician, student, and aspiring archivist, I don't want to see our heritage lost. I'm happy to sign this. Three cheers to the organizers. I like that. May this go forward. There has to be a way to get this right without harming the current record industry. That's our goal. I think this is a worthy cause. This is vitally important to preserving materials that otherwise be lost, as signed by the chairman of one of the Grammy nominating committees. This gives us an opportunity to connect with our past. So there are, people are putting comments from various perspectives, which are very useful too. If you want to do that, you certainly can. You don't have to. But the one thing you need to do is sign. Yes, thank you very much. All right. I can take a couple of questions, and then I want to turn it over to Brenda. Yes. We have let Laz Yaza know about this. It's a change U.S. law initiative, of course. So it's not strictly international, but I'd be happy to reach out again if you think that would
Richard
be productive.
Richard Green is on the list.
I'm sorry?
Richard Green is
yes,
on your list.
Yes, so. Yes. And he has provided, he was president, wasn't he, of
Yaza? Yes.
He has provided a link to us, but if you think that that might be productive to do now, I could certainly, sure, you think so? On a political basis, whether it's Republicans or Democrats in control, as far as I can tell, and Sam Brolofsky and others who are there, it makes no difference at all. This is not a partisan kind of issue. In terms of turnover, it's interesting. We had a very strong advocate and one of the senior Democratic leaders there that helped us get that bill passed. He's retiring, so we lost him. On the other hand, there are others we may be able to line up too. And newer members coming in are presumably more open to looking at these things. On the other hand, they don't have any clout because Washington, as you may know, is run by like a handful of people, the big committee chairs and the Speaker of the House. It's like this huge mosaic with everything changing at once. We were talking about this last night, and you can focus on the parts of it. That's not very good. We're losing him. But there's other parts of it that can be good, and you have to be very nimble to stay on top of it. I think, personally, that some kind of disruption in the status quo probably would be in our benefit. I should mention, too, that the Mary Beth Peters is retiring, so the head of the Copyright Office, depending on who they appoint, which very political, that could be good or bad, the person coming in. If it's an Espinel kind of person, it could be good for us, somebody who's relatively open, and Obama's administration seems to be that way, to some extent at least. So it could be good. Yes?
Do you have any update on the European possibility of changing the copyright law, extending?
Yeah, I don't want to take a lot of time, but very briefly what happened was they were moving relatively fast early last year toward expanding copyright there under pressure from the record companies from 50 years to 95 years because we've got to be like the U.S. They ran into a firestorm in Brussels just as they had in England, organized by the Electronic Frontier Foundation's international branch that got huge petitions against it, and several of the national archives, including the British Library, that went on record and saying this is not good. And that slowed it down long enough so that the head of the European Union changes every 6 months, rotates to a different country, and a less favorable country took over the chairmanship in mid-09, and that put the kibosh on that, so nothing happened. Another country that doesn't want this to happen took over in January of 10, so nothing's happening now either. I think there's a more favorable country in charge starting in the middle of 2010, so presumably in the second half of this year they'll make another push. But by this time, they've got at least 10 countries out of the EU who don't want to do this at all or want to substantially pull it back. And the other countries could override them, but that's not usually the way the EU works. So the signs are that if they do pass something, you may read a headline about Europe goes to 70 years or something, it's going to be much watered down. It's not probably going to be 95 years. It almost certainly will not match the U.S. in its absoluteness. There will be a use it or lose it clause. There will be funds for musicians to fund them and not just the record companies. There will be all kinds of things, you know, that rein it back in some way, because that's a negotiation that's going on now. One more. Yes, in the back.
As far as getting more people to sign the petition, we could join with Mouvement.org. They have a very long list that they sent out petitions to. My signed petition with Mouvement, it's the first thing that I've been able to do. You make a Facebook group, get people to join, and link to the petition more directly. There's also a website or a blog called Boing Boing, and that's done with readers.
I'll look at the Boing Boing if there are others. Move On, I'm not sure. Move On's a very partisan organization, and I'm not sure we want to be aligned one way or the other in terms of that, liberal conservative kind of thing, because that's not the copyright anyway. And it might turn off people who said, what are you doing with Move On? But the others, the ones that aren't, you know, focused on copyright and Boing Boing, that, thank you. That's a good suggestion. I'm sorry, I really need to move on to Brenda. Okay, one last question.
No information. On the petition, when you sign the petition, there is a set of links for sharing it on places like Facebook, StumbleUpon,
yes.
And all that.